Usually, when you ask a senior developer a technical question, you expect a really technical answer.
Right, yeah, like you want to hear about network latency or database query optimization or something.
Exactly. You definitely do not expect them to use the word magic. But over the last decade, as the modern web stack has evolved, that is exactly what's been happening.
Which is, I mean, it's honestly terrible.
It is. I was actually talking with an engineer recently about their very first introduction to the concept of serverless architecture.
Yeah.
And the person explaining it to them used the word magic four separate times in 10 minutes.
Oh, wow. Yeah. It is completely understandable why that engineer walked away more confused than when they started.
Right.
That kind of language is a massive red flag. When we're talking about infrastructure and architecture, magic is usually just a placeholder for, I don't actually know how the plumbing works. Or, honestly, worse, it's a marketing term specifically designed to obscure the reality of the system.
So you just buy the product and stop asking questions. And as a developer, you don't want magic. You want to know exactly where your code is running, how it's executing, and, well, what it's going to cost you when things inevitably go wrong.
Yeah, you have to know where the metal is.
Right. So if you're listening to this, I want to welcome you. You are likely a seasoned WordPress developer. You've probably spent like the last 5 to 15 years deep in the trenches with PHP, writing custom MySQL queries, managing those complex plugin ecosystems.
Which is tough work, by the way.
Oh, absolutely. You know how to build the web. But right now, you are stepping into the modern web stack and you have reached module 10 of your 16-module course.
It's a great place to be, really, because you already possess a rock-solid foundation in how the internet fundamentally operates.
Right, basics are there.
Yeah, now it's just about translating that hard-earned knowledge into an entirely new paradigm. You just need the new mental model.
Yeah, and our mission for this deep dive is to completely de-jargon two of the most consistently misnamed, just hyped-up concepts in modern web development, serverless and edge.
The big buzzwords.
The biggest. We're going to map these directly to the PHP and micro realities you deal with every single day. And we are going to mercilessly cut through the marketing fluff to see what's actually happening on the metal.
Okay, let's unpack this because to state the obvious, there absolutely are servers in serverless.
There are absolutely servers. Like there are massive warehouse-sized buildings filled with rack upon rack of blinking servers sitting in data centers, just humming away, consuming megawatts of power.
Right.
Serverless is honestly a terrible name. What's fascinating here is that the word serverless only describes what you do not see, not what doesn't exist.
Okay, so it's an abstraction.
Exactly. It's an abstraction of responsibility. It means you are no longer the person responsible for patching the operating system or, updating the runtime or replacing a failed hard drive.
Got it. Now, to really get why this matters, we need to quickly baseline it against the model you already know inside and out. Let's look at the classic WordPress request lifecycle.
The old reliable. Yeah, you know the drill. A visitor hits your URL, your web server, usually Nginx or Apache, takes that request and writes it to PHP FPM.
Right.
And then PHP boots up the core WordPress code base, queries your MySQL database to get the post content, renders the HTML, and just shoots the response back to the user.
Yeah, and the key characteristic here isn't the specific language, it's the state of the machine itself.
State of the machine, what do you mean?
Well, in that traditional model, your server is always running. Your PHP FPM service is actively keeping a pool of worker processes warm. They're literally just sitting in the server's memory waiting.
Right, they're ready to go.
Yeah, when the next request comes in, the server just hands it to one of those warm, ready workers. The memory is shared across the environment. The database connections are persistent. It's a highly prepared, always-on environment.
Okay, so a great way to visualize this traditional WordPress setup is to think of it like a buffet line at a restaurant.
Oh, I like that.
Right. The kitchen has already cooked the food, it's out in the chafing dishes, the heat lamps are glowing, and it is entirely ready for the next person to just walk up and grab a plate.
Yes.
But there is a massive catch to the buffet model. You pay the electricity bill to keep those heat lamps on and that food warm, regardless of whether there's a line out the door or absolutely nobody in the restaurant at 3 a.m.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You are paying for idle capacity. You're renting that VPS or that dedicated server 24 hours a day, 7 days a week,
Right.
regardless of your actual traffic curve.
Right.
Serverless architecture flips that entire financial and operational model completely on its head. If traditional hosting is a buffet line, serverless is an order-by-order kitchen.
Which means the cloud platform, whether that's AWS or Vercel or Netlify, is essentially acting as your restaurant manager.
Right.
The kitchen is fully equipped, But absolutely no one turns on the stove or fires up a frying pan until an order ticket actually comes in.
That is the exact mechanism. When an HTTP request arrives, the serverless platform intercepts it, and in a fraction of a second, it allocates compute resources, spins up a tiny isolated container, loads your specific piece of code into that container, executes it, returns the response, and then completely destroys that container.
Wow, just completely scrubs it from existence.
Scrubbed. Sometimes it might keep the container briefly warm for a few minutes just in case another request comes in right behind it. But the fundamental paradigm shift for you as a developer is that your code must assume that absolutely nothing persists between request A and request B.
It's totally ephemeral.
Entirely ephemeral.
And because the architecture is rigidly dictated by that order-by-order reality, it forces some major compromises. This is where the utopian hype of serverless hits a very solid brick wall of reality. Let's talk about the first big shift, which is pricing. The shape of your bill changes entirely, doesn't it?
It really does. In your traditional buffet model, your cost is highly predictable. It's a flat monthly fee for the server, say 20 or 40 bucks a month. In the serverless order-by-order kitchen, you pay for invocations and compute duration. You literally pay per dish cooked.
Wait, so if I have 10 requests an hour?
Your cost is functionally zero. The platforms offer massive free tiers, so for low traffic sites, it is essentially free.
Oh, wow.
But if a post goes viral and you suddenly have 10 million requests, you're paying a micro fraction of a cent for every single one of those executions.
Okay, so your costs scale perfectly in lockstep with your traffic.
Exactly.
Which is an absolute dream for a startup trying to keep burn rate low, but it can be absolutely terrifying if you have, like, inefficient code that suddenly gets hit by a wave of traffic.
Oh, a total nightmare.
So we've solved the idle server problem, but that ephemeral nature creates a new, very noticeable headache. If that container doesn't exist until the user asks for it, that means the user has to wait for it to be created.
Yeah.
This is the dreaded cold start. I know modern platforms have done a lot to hide this, but why does it take so long? What's actually happening during a cold start that makes a user wait, you know, 2 full seconds for a page to load?
Think about the physics of what the platform has to do. When a cold start happens, the platform has to find an available server rack somewhere in their data center. It has to provision a micro virtual machine. It has to boot a stripped-down Linux operating system. It has to boot the Node.js runtime.
Oh, what?
Then it downloads your code, parses dependencies, and finally executes your function. Doing all of that from a dead stop takes time.
Right.
Now, engineers at AWS and Vercel have spent millions optimizing this, lazy loading dependencies and shrinking boot times down. But physics is physics. Booting an environment from zero will always incur a latency penalty that your user is going to feel.
Which introduces another massive limitation. If the platform is optimizing for spinning these tiny containers up and tearing them down constantly, it doesn't want them hanging around.
No, not at all.
So there are strict execution time limits. A serverless function typically has to finish its job within a few seconds. Usually there's a hard kill switch at anywhere from 15 to maybe 300 seconds, depending on your tier.
Yeah, that's about right.
So let me put my WordPress developer hat on here for a second. If I am used to writing a custom PHP script that I trigger from the admin panel, right? And it just sits there and chugs through a massive 50 megabyte CSV product import, updating hundreds of database rows for 5 straight minutes, what happens to that script in a serverless environment? Does it just time out?
It doesn't just time out. The platform mercilessly executes it.
It steals it.
It drops the connection and kills the container mid-process. It will simply fail. This raises an important question about choosing the right architecture for the specific feature you're building. This is exactly where you have to look past the blanket serverless hype.
Yeah, you can't ask a fast food fry cook to slow roast a 12-hour brisket. It's the wrong kitchen for the job.
I love that analogy. It's the completely wrong kitchen. When you hit requirements like processing massive files or heavy video encoding or, you know, holding a WebSocket connection open for a real-time live chat app, you don't force it into a serverless function.
So what do you do?
You have to pivot your architecture. You either move to a queue and worker pattern, where your quick serverless function simply drops a message into a queue like Redis and returns instantly while a separate background process handles the heavy lifting, or you ditch serverless for that feature entirely.
Okay, so going back to always on.
Right, you use a container always on model. Platforms like Fly.io or Railway give you the sleek, modern Git push deployment workflows of serverless, but they keep the container running constantly, exactly like your old traditional server.
Okay, so that establishes the boundaries of serverless. It was the first big buzzword that dominated the last decade, but then a few years later, the word edge came along and somehow muddied the waters even further.
Yeah, people use them interchangeably, and they absolutely shouldn't.
Right.
We need to define what edge actually means for a developer in 2026, because it really represents two distinct concepts that marketing departments love to blur together.
They blur them because one sounds amazing and the other is a heavy technical constraint. Let's start with the amazing part, the geographic reality. The first definition of edge is geographic edge.
Okay.
This is purely about physical distance and the speed of light. In a standard serverless setup, your code might all live in a single data center in, say, AWS US East 1 in Virginia. If a user in Tokyo clicks a button, that request has to travel under the Pacific Ocean to Virginia and back.
Which takes time.
Right, about 200 milliseconds. Edge architecture takes your code and physically replicates it to hundreds of data centers all over the globe.
Right, so a user in Lisbon hits a server in Lisbon. A user in Tokyo hits a server in Tokyo. Building on a restaurant analogy, if container serverless is an order-by-order kitchen in one city, geographic edge is like putting a tiny version of that exact kitchen in every single neighborhood in the world.
Exactly. Your food doesn't have to travel across the city. It comes from down the street. The latency drops from 200 milliseconds to maybe 20 or 30 milliseconds. That part makes intuitive sense. But it's that tiny version part where we hit the second definition, isn't it? The constrained runtime.
Yes. And for you, the developer actually writing the code, the constrained runtime is the much bigger deal. Think about it. You cannot instantly boot a full, heavy Linux and Node container in hundreds of global locations in 1 millisecond. The overhead is too massive.
Right. That would be impossible.
So to achieve those blazing fast global spin-up times, platforms like Cloudflare Workers, Vercel Edge Runtime, and Dino Deploy use a completely different underlying technology. They don't use full containers. They use something called V8 isolates.
Okay, let's unpack this V8 isolate concept, because this is where the magic trick gets revealed. What is an isolate, really?
Well, V8 is the JavaScript engine that powers Google Chrome. An isolate is essentially taking that engine and running a single thread of execution inside it.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, imagine having a massive instance of Chrome already running on a server. When a request comes in, instead of booting up a whole new computer, the server just opens a new, highly secure, invisible browser tab, runs your JavaScript in that tab, and then closes it.
Wow.
Because the environment is already running, the boot time drops from hundreds of milliseconds down to just 1 to 5 milliseconds. It is incredibly fast.
But speed always has a cost. If I'm cooking in this tiny, ultra-fast neighborhood kitchen, what am I actually losing? Because it sounds like I don't have access to my usual appliances.
You are losing a massive chunk of your standard toolkit, because a V8 isolate is just a raw JavaScript engine stripped of the underlying operating system context. You have zero access to the file system.
Wait, really? Zero?
Zero. You cannot read or write a file to disk. Furthermore, you do not have access to the full Node.js API. So if you try to NPM install a package that relies on core Node modules, like the FS module for file system access, or certain native cryptographic libraries, it simply will not work.
It just crashes.
Your code will crash because those APIs literally do not exist in that constrained environment.
That is a staggering trade-off. I mean, the geographic distribution is a nice bonus, but the runtime constraints are the reality you'll actually spend your time fighting or working around. You have to write code specifically for the edge.
You do.
So knowing all of this at the time limits of serverless, the runtime limits of edge, it becomes really clear that these aren't just simple on-off switches for your whole website. This leads us to how a modern developer actually builds an application today. We are entirely moving away from the monolithic hosting model into a mix-and-match reality. You're composing the stack.
This is the core paradigm shift for anyone coming from the WordPress world. In WordPress, your entire application, the public blog, the e-commerce checkout, the REST API, the admin dashboard, it all lives on one server,
Sure. Running
the exact same PHP runtime.
Yeah.
In the modern web stack, you decompose that application based on the specific needs of each feature.
Let's visualize this with a modern Next.js application, which is highly relevant to this phase of your course. Look at how the different pieces operate. The marketing pages, you don't need compute for those at all.
Right.
Those use static HTML and something called ISR, which stands for incremental static regeneration. It's just pre-built HTML sitting on a global CDN that occasionally rebuilds itself in the background. No serverless functions, no cold starts. Then you have the auth middleware.
Mm-hmm.
the piece of code checking if a user's session cookie is valid on every single page load.
Which has to be fast.
Extremely fast, and run close to the user, so you deploy that specific function to the edge runtime.
Right. But then the user logs in and hits their main dashboard, which requires fetching highly complex relational user data. For that route, you drop back to container serverless standard node functions.
Because you need the power.
Exactly. Because you need the full node API, you might need heavier database drivers. And you're okay with a slightly longer initial cold start for an authenticated dashboard. And finally, if that user uploads a heavy 4K video to their dashboard, you hand that background job off to an always-on container like Fly.io.
So my entire workflow completely changes. Instead of deciding where does my site live like I do when I sign up for a traditional host, I'm now deciding where does this specific route or function run. I'm treating infrastructure as a per-route writing decision.
You absolutely are. You're selecting the runtime environment function by function. And what's fascinating here is how this entirely changes the concept of scaling. Think about your WordPress experience. If your site gets wildly successful, you have to do incredibly stressful capacity planning. You have to migrate the database to a larger instance, configure a load balancer, set up multiple web nodes, and just pray it all holds together under load.
I have spent weekends doing exactly that, staring at HTOP while the CPU usage climbs to 99%. It's horrible.
It is. With a composable serverless stack, the compute layer scales invisibly and automatically. If 10,000 concurrent users hit your checkout route, Vercel or AWS just instantly spin up 10,000 isolated functions. You don't have to provision a single thing.
It feels like magic.
It does feel like magic. But, and this is the most critical, but in modern web development, the bottleneck doesn't disappear. It simply moves. It moves straight from the compute layer down to the data layer.
Because if 10,000 serverless functions spin up in the exact same millisecond, and they all simultaneously ask the database for inventory information.
They all try to open a brand new independent database connection.
Yeah.
Let's look at a traditional database like Postgres. Postgres is designed to allocate a fairly heavy OS process for every single active connection. It expects a small number of persistent connections from a traditional server. It does not expect 10,000 new connections per second. If you point raw serverless functions directly at a standard Postgres database, it will immediately exhaust its connection limit, panic, and crash. Your compute scaled perfectly, but it killed your database in the process.
Which connects perfectly back to what you learned in Module 6. You cannot run serverless compute without a database connection pooler like PGBouncer, or using a specialized managed database like Supabase or Neon that handles the pooling for you at the edge.
Yes.
The pooler sits between the thousands of serverless functions and the database, managing a small, stable number of connections to Postgres while queuing the rapid-fire requests from the edge.
Exactly. Understanding that mechanical relationship is mandatory.
And that is a perfect pivot into the traps and pitfalls of this architecture. Because this composable stack is undeniably powerful. But if we treat you, the listener, as the smart, experienced developer you are, we have to point out the landmines. If you try to drag your monolithic WordPress mental model directly into this distributed stack without adjusting, things will break.
Oh, they definitely will.
And speaking of things failing, let's talk about the first trap, statelessness.
We mentioned the ephemeral nature of the container, but it bears repeating because it causes so many bugs. In WordPress, if a user uploads an avatar image, move loaded file, puts it right on the local file system. You cannot do that in serverless.
Because it just disappears.
Right. The moment the request ends, the container and the file system are wiped. Any state, any uploaded file, any persistent data has to be instantly shipped to an external service like an AWS S3 bucket before the function terminates.
Trap number two is those hidden cold starts. When you are building a Next.js app locally on your M-Series MacBook, it feels incredibly fast. But when deployed, you have to measure your P95 latency.
Yeah, that's crucial.
That means looking at the slowest 5% of your traffic, not just the median average. Your median might be 50 milliseconds, but your P95 might be 2 full seconds, because that 5% is constantly hitting cold starts as containers cycle out.
Trap number three is the financial vulnerability. Because you pay per invocation, your infrastructure is essentially a public API tied directly to your credit card.
Yikes.
A misbehaving bot, an aggressive web scraper, or a malicious DDoS attack can run up a massive bill overnight. You must set hard spend caps in your hosting dashboard, and you should be using per IP rate limiting at the edge layer to aggressively block bots before they can trigger your more expensive, heavier backend functions.
And trap number four, the edge is not Node. Remember the tiny kitchen. You have to aggressively check compatibility tables before you commit to using Edge for a critical route. But here's where it gets really interesting, and this is entirely unique to the era we're building in right now. I want to talk about AI coding assistants and their massive blind spots.
This is such a critical insight for modern developers relying on Copilot or Claude.
Think about how large language models are trained. They consume vast amounts of GitHub repositories. Over the last 5 years, a huge percentage of modern JavaScript and TypeScript code pushed to GitHub assumes a serverless or edge-like model.
Right.
So if you are in your editor and you ask an AI to generate a feature for you, it's highly likely to output stateless short execution code because that is the statistical majority of its training data for modern web frameworks.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, this is where AI becomes dangerous. If you do not fundamentally understand the underlying constraints we've talked about today, the lack of file system, the ephemeral state, the database connection limits, the AI will confidently generate code that looks perfectly syntactically correct.
It looks fine.
Yeah, it might even pass a quick local test on your machine, but it will silently and catastrophically fail in a production serverless environment because it tried to write a file to a disk that disappears a millisecond later.
It's writing stateful logic for a stateless reality. And understanding these underlying constraints, understanding the physical reality of the environment where that code executes, is exactly what separates a senior systems engineer from someone who's just blindly copying, pasting, and deploying whatever the AI spits out.
Very true.
Reading the compatibility documentation like Vercel's Edge runtime docs or Cloudflare's Node compatibility matrix is no longer an optional step. It is the core engineering work of this decade.
It is the difference between knowing the grammar of a language mm-hmm. and knowing the physics of the world you are speaking it in. It's a profound shift in how you architect the web.
Okay, we have covered an immense amount of ground today. We translated the WordPress buffet line into the serverless order-by-order kitchen. We looked at the mechanical realities of pricing, the physics of cold starts, and the hard limits on execution time.
Yeah.
We defined Edge as both geographical speed of light advantages and the severe constraints of V8 isolate runtime environments. And we looked at how to compose a modern app without stepping on connection pooling landmines.
You now have the mental model. You know where the code actually runs.
To wrap up, I want to point you towards some incredible resources to help you solidify this. If you're at the gym or commuting, pull up the Fireship YouTube channel. He has two specific videos, Serverless in 100 Seconds and Edge Functions in 100 Seconds.
Those are great.
They're incredibly dense, perfectly framed overviews. Also, check out the Cloudflare YouTube channel's video on building on Cloudflare workers. Even if your course pushes you toward deploying on Vercel, seeing how Cloudflare natively approaches the edge will really sharpen your understanding of the V8 isolate mechanics.
And if you really want to understand the foundational philosophy, search for the official AWS Lambda white papers online. Just read the first introductory chapter. AWS essentially invented this modern ephemeral paradigm, and reading their rationale sets the conceptual baseline that every other platform in the world is currently reacting to.
Next up for you in your course is Module 11, which is going to bring full containers and Docker back into the picture and explain the scenarios where you genuinely need that always-on persistence instead of ephemeral serverless. But before we go, I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over. We started this deep dive by talking about the frustration of the word magic and how serverless just abstracts the hardware away so you don't have to manage it.
The plumbing is hidden behind an API.
Exactly. So here is the question. If serverless architecture successfully abstracted away the physical server and edge architecture is currently abstracting away the geographic location of your code, what part of the infrastructure is going to be abstracted away next? And as developers, at what point does that abstraction stop being a helpful convenience and start becoming a dangerous loss of control over the very applications we are fleeing to build? Something to think about next time someone tries to sell you infrastructure as magic.